Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So I thought I'd say a bit about the Satipatthana Sutta, or the practice of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So often when we come to meditate and begin to look more inside, then the two things that constitute our internal world are thoughts and feelings. And these are two of the four foundations of mindfulness. There are two others, the body and the citta. So the body is a straightforward thing. We all know what the body is, or so we think. And the citta, this is what perhaps in Western terms we wouldn't call the mind, we would call the spirit, I would say. But it's in Buddhist terms, this is the emptiness of the mind, the citta. So strictly speaking, then the third foundation of mindfulness of the citta is something that we only see in a very pure way after we've experienced samadhi. So if we experience samadhi, then we've seen the citta directly, the nature of it, brightness of the mind, inner brightness. And yet before this point, we can also recognize the stillness of the mind or the brightness of the mind that has mindfulness, a simple awareness in the present moment. So this is our first glimmer of the citta. So as we come to practice the four foundations of mindfulness, then we have to balance out the predominance of these experiences of thought and feeling. To balance that out by paying more attention to the two things, the body and the citta, so the emptiness of the mind, brightness of the mind, presence of mind, the mind in and of itself can be reflected in the experience of space or the experience of the breath to an experienced meditator. This is what we're looking for. And then there's the other one, the body. As I said at the beginning, this can seem, well, it's obvious, this one, we all know what the body is. We're walking around in one, and yet it cannot be so obvious what this first foundation of mindfulness really is. So if we look at the way that we develop this through awareness of posture, movement, elements, these ways of being aware of our posture, aware of the simple movements of the body, and aware of the elements or the constituents, hardness and softness, this dimension of the body, then this is different from the normal experience. What we can realize is that our normal experience of the body is one of feeling. All we have between our head and the ground is a bunch of feelings. Certainly like that for me. So I had to look for this, to establish this other kind of experience, which is a very neutral, natural experience, just of the body sitting. And to give you an example, when I was first practicing, I'd been practicing mindfulness of breathing for some years, but I was first practicing it at the nose tip. It changed my way of concentrating, and sitting there one day as an anagarika, and feeling the breath moving in and out, then I was curious to realize that there were these hard objects behind this object of the breath behind this, these sensations called the breath, like little stones. It took me a moment to realize that they were my teeth, and that this was just a kind of a completely different kind of experience of my teeth, one that I'd not had before, and one that was associated with this very natural sense of them, but also an image in the mind, so this little image coming into the mind of the teeth. So the reason I describe this to you is because at the time it seemed a little significant, but over the following years of practice, I began to realise how significant a breakthrough this had been. This image forming, this mental image forming. So that all these different practices that we aim at to establish the first foundation of mindfulness of the body then can all come together to develop a kind of new body image within the mind, completely new and related to the Dhamma. Related also to this third foundation of mindfulness of the citta. So there were my teeth sitting there in this nice bright space, two together, the body and the purity or emptiness of the mind together. And just for the moment then, there's an absence of thought and feeling, or a kind of opening of thought and feeling. So a kind of transformation can occur of our experience through that, at that point, a very important one. And we realise why we've been doing what we've been doing. We can see that it can be difficult to keep going, have enough faith to keep going, to just applying our minds, giving our minds to normal experiences. Walking, sitting, so on. So tremendous faith is required to keep this going long enough for this image to develop in the mind, and then also to be able to see, to recognize its significance is very important. I didn't recognize this myself until later, so there's a bit of kind of, in a sense, time wasted, I think. So. You know, this is the reason I like to point this out to people. So if you go at it like this, it says in the Satipatthana Sutta, this is a direct path. It's development of what comes into samadhi, development of samadhi through body awareness, so looking at the body in this way, developing this image of it in the mind, is the direct way. It has no place to get stuck. So the development of concentration is a very good support for this practice. Developing mindfulness through concentration, and yet one can get waylaid on the path of concentration or the path of the Brahmaviharas, these different ways through, which there are probably many. They all to the, in the Buddha's mind, have their places where you can get stuck or diverted, and they're not the most direct. Satipatthana Sutta, and we see this, it's almost like a combination between the path of concentration and contemplation, because you're using the breath as your kind of vehicle to become aware of the body. This is very clever of the Buddha, combining these two paths together, the one of concentration and the one of contemplation. And then as he goes on to examine the other foundations of mindfulness, having established the first, and then you'll see that he's continually referring back to the body. So in terms of the sense bases, for example, that the different phenomena of the senses are seen as arising dependent upon the eye or the ear, so on. So visual objects arise dependent on the eye. This is bringing you back to the body. Auditory consciousness dependent upon the ear, again bringing you back to the body. And seeing the impermanence of these phenomena in that way. And the use of the body then is one that, as a meditation object, then brings calm and insight together, samatha and vipassana together. It's the only object that does that. Really? Can't think of an and on that. I thought there was one. Can't find one. So for some people this can be a puzzle. You know, we come into spiritual life, we come into these kind of places or environments, and often we can think, well, here I am, a human being, and you know, I really want to try and find the kind of spiritual dimension in life. It's often the way round we see it. You know, here I am, I want to develop my meditation, become more spiritual, and this can turn around on us if we understand the significance of the body. Then this can turn around on us, and instead of being a human being trying to become more spiritual, we can see ourselves as a spiritual being trying to become more human, or trying to find the best use of a human life or a human body, a human situation. Seeing the value of this human situation for the mind, and what an opportunity this human situation, this human body gives us as a practitioner. Seeing clearly the relationship between the body and mind is where the Dhamma is. It's where both wisdom and compassion can arise, both together. Otherwise, this is a difficult one to talk about. You know, how do you talk about wisdom and compassion together? The language will tend to take you either in one direction or another. Whereas as the bare awareness of the body can lead to the arising of both of these in the mind. This is the fruits of it. So a quality like equanimity, for example, is often misunderstood, or detachment. All these kind of words, we have to be very careful how we use them. They can seem cold or indifferent. This would be an example of how we try to conceptualize these things, and it can lead us astray. We're not seeing it's because we've taken one direction with our mind, and it's only the body that brings these different directions together, the samatha and the vipassana, or the wisdom and the compassion, or these kind of qualities. So perhaps to give you another example of how this can bear fruit in a kind of surprising ways is quite simple. I mean, again, seem like a simple thing, not a kind of mystical or exotic thing. But I remember one time in Devon Vihara, then it was a winter retreat, a lot of snow, and snow had been on the ground for some time, quite deep. And I'd been practicing this awareness of the body, just walking up and down, sitting, you know, doing all the chores. Actually, quite difficult to keep warm. I had to keep going out in the cold and cutting wood and bringing it in to keep the fire going. So it's quite a physical existence, and with the elements, so on. And I was just doing this as a kind of a normal thing. You know, this is what I always do at the beginning of the winter retreat, first foundation of mindfulness, right, off we go, dum-da-dum. Nothing special. And yet, having said that, there was a degree of composure that comes to the mind just through being aware of walking, consciously walking, consciously sitting, a kind of sense of composure in the mind, but nothing special. And then looking out of the window one afternoon, there's a deer going through the snow, and you know, it's kind of struggling through the snow, which looked very tired, hungry deer. And without any kind of thought arising in my mind, just witnessing this, then there's a lot of compassion arising, very spontaneously. Just in a different kind of way to usual, no thought. So it's like a kind of natural empathy, one body to another, so to speak. Yet there was no suffering in that, you know, it was just there was more of an opening of the mind than a grasping of the mind, something like that. So a different quality, which, again, at the time, it didn't seem terribly significant. It just seemed different. So again, this is another kind of experience which is useful to point out its kind of significance. As you're looking back on it, then realizing how usually the thought process is to some degree involved. You know, there's some thought, oh, the poor deer. But there wasn't anything like that. It was a very spontaneous, natural thing. And the other characteristic, a very significant one of it, not being any suffering to it. How is it imagined? How can we otherwise imagine compassion without an element of suffering? Hard to imagine. But experienceable. And in a very impersonal way, you know, it's not something that you could even pat yourself on the back for, because it just seems to happen quite naturally and as a fruit of hard work of practice. So this is a very down-to-earth kind of religion, isn't it? And you know, the Thai forest tradition it's a very down-to-earth tradition indeed. This is theoretically what the Kruber Ajahns in Thailand see us as most suited for, this path of wisdom to wisdom first. So it can be different from what we otherwise would associate with this tradition. There's a book about this, you know, Wisdom Develops Samadhi by Longdan Mahabua. want to read that, that's a good one. So that's a good framework in there if you want to dwell on this kind of framework of practice, then it's all in there. So you can do it, you know, you just got to keep going. So I've been going at it a long time, not too long already.